it was not as much of a, oh, this career is completely unviable at this point. It's, if anything, a better time for young people who are willing and ready to learn to get into it and say, okay, I can see that this career field is changing, so I'm going to jump in during a time of change when a lot of people who are going to be much more resistant and are not going to be as ready and willing to learn and adapt to that change are going to struggle a lot, whereas I'm going to be in a position where I don't have a lot of those bad habits, or just I'm not as locked into this is the way that things are supposed to be. I can jump in and say, I'm ready to learn the new way of doing things. I'm ready to take the old principles and combine it with the new technologies and find and potentially pioneer new ways of doing things that are exciting and interesting and kind of create my own new career field for myself.
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
We're glad that you're with us again, so thanks for listening in. We have some things that we've been talking about here recently. As many of you know, David and I work for Unbound, and so we have this program that we run. And so we just came off of APEX, and that's our national conference. But just as soon as we get off APEX, we turn around and we get ready for Basecamp. And so APEX is a certain kind of event. There's a lot of different things happening. Basecamp is a little bit more of an intense event. It has a little bit more intensity in terms of content and things like that, which means that part of our job is to really spend the time between APEX and Basecamp going, what are some of the things that are on students' minds right now? What are some of the things that they're facing right now? And how do we interpret those in light of some things that are unchanging in terms of principles, things are true no matter what, and also some trends that we're seeing that we can get some perspective on? And so we've been having those conversations recently. And as we prepare for Basecamp, it's always helpful to look back and see what the students themselves named as some of their big things for APEX. And the cabinet this year, the student group that plans APEX, had the theme of APEX Shift. And Shift was a stand-in for change, for things that are changing rapidly. And that's interesting because as I've been talking to students and parents as I'm traveling around the country and I'm on the road and I'm talking to local parents and talking to students, there seems to be a definite anxiety around change. And David and I were discussing this a little bit earlier, and it has to do with, I think there's some more anxiety about what kind of job I'm supposed to get. There's a little bit of anxiety about perhaps a tightening job market. There's certainly a lot of anxiety about a world changing on multiple areas, politically, nationally, internationally, things between tariffs and wars and all that kind of thing. And then there's another wrinkle here, and I've had this conversation a couple of times. And so recently, I was talking to somebody who had started a kind of an entry-level job, but they're a senior at a large state school. And I said, what are you doing next? And they just kind of got this look in their eyes. They're like, I really have no idea. And that was interesting because it was juxtaposed against somebody I had a conversation with a few weeks ago where they were talking about getting a CDL, but they weren't sure if they wanted to because they thought AI would be driving trucks in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so there's this really interesting, normal, generational young person, I don't know what I'm going to do, how do I prepare for the future thing, which is pretty universal and not necessarily unusual. But then it has this extra thread, David, running through it with, I don't know what to do because I'm not sure where AI is going to completely replace me. And it's turning into an excuse and maybe a good reason for some paralysis. So what have you been observing, David, as we're preparing for Basecamp and think about some of this content?
Yeah. So it's worth noting that this is something that as we've worked with young adults for many years now, that this is what we're seeing right now is potentially a little bit newer in form, but not necessarily in nature. And what I mean by that is that students and young people just generations past have pretty much always struggled with the question of what am I going to do next? Once I reach the stage where I am out in the world independently, once I've kind of finished all of the main things that, I've set out to accomplish academically or my parents have set me up to accomplish academically, what else am I going to do? And that's, in some form or fashion, has almost always been a struggle. There's been different things where in family businesses that's been less common in certain parts of history, but generally it's happened a lot. And so I think what we're seeing now is just that same struggle yet again, and we're just seeing it take a little bit of a different form because of technology again. But I think that there is some comfort for us to be able to say that this isn't actually something that's totally new. Yes, AI is bringing some, to use the word that's been beaten into the dirt, unprecedented levels of change. But I think that AI probably is deserving of that level of credit, at least in some areas. But ultimately, I think you and I, Jonathan, were just talking about a little bit before we start recording this, of the fact that AI may be bringing a lot of change, but I don't think that necessarily means that it should completely scare you off from trying to take the next step and venture into a specific career field. So I don't know if we want to try to get into that at all.
Well, I was thinking before we started, we were trying to talk a little bit about some parallels. And we talked about some things, and this was an imperfect analogy, and I was still getting to think about it because I didn't like the one I was using. I said, you know, I wonder if there's people that when they switched over from horses and plows and stuff like that to tractors, if there's people saying, well, I'm not going to get into farming because tractors are just going to replace the farmer. I suspect there was some conversation around that, and maybe you would have been more specific and say, I'm not going to get into horse breeding because farmers, but there's an interesting thing in both of those. Clearly, tractors did not eliminate farmers, and maybe that was not the kind of major concern. On the same token, tractors didn't eliminate horse breeders either, although you certainly did shrink the market a good bit. But really good horse breeders still can make a lot of money breeding horses. Mm-hmm. And so there's something to be known for, you know, something to be said for that kind of those niche industries hanging on, and that's defined by your expertise and your ability, and there's always that possibility. But clearly, there's not as many horse breeders now as there was before tractors. I mean,
right. So
you're talking about a major narrowing of the field. So I was casting around a little bit, and I was trying to think about some other analogies. And actually, I think we have some really recent ones. So most people, not all, and I realize that I'm getting old enough that it's not all, but most people listening to this will have gone through two unprecedented technological changes in very recent history that I think match the level of AI. And the first would be the advent of the internet. Now, I don't mean the actual invention of the internet, which is a lot older than most people think, but I mean like the sort of wholesale adoption of the internet, which I'd say happened between like 95 and 2005. So in that 10-year period.
Dot-com bubble, that kind of thing.
Yeah, all those kinds of things. And the second would be the social media explosion. And so, David, I don't know, you know, when was it was after I graduated from college and had been at work for a while before I first started to hear about something like Facebook and things of that nature.
Yeah, that's probably like late 2000s, early 2010s, somewhere around there.
Yeah, so 2009, 8, 10, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. But you think about 2010 to say 2020, right? So like so listeners, this is not intended to be a precise historical reflection here, but you know, from the period 1995 to about 2005, you had the dawn of the internet when it was in the sense that it went from nobody really knew what it was to everybody was using it. And from roughly 2010 to 2020, social media became the dominant use of the internet. And so if you put those things together and say, well, those are both unprecedented changes, David, I was interested in terms of what that looked like from people who didn't know how to use it and people who did know how to use it. And so I'm probably stretching too much in terms of dawn of internet stuff, but for you, what was, just thinking about you, where you personally, what was your kind of first exposure to social media? And then when did that switch from exposure to utility? And what I mean by that, David, is that, you know, for Unbound, you use social media extensively as a tool that is a primary tool for your job. Mm-hmm. So it is now, you know, I would say you get paid to figure out social media on a couple different levels, primarily in the back end operationally in terms of ad buys and campaigns mm-hmm. and all those kinds of things. But, you know, think back with me. When were you first exposed to social media in terms of like, oh, this is a thing? Do you have a memory of that?
Yeah, I do remember back in the day. I don't know if this is still the case, but I was definitely of the age where Facebook was still like the big social media platform that all of the kids were on. So that's already a little bit of a measure of the fact that I'm no longer hip with.
Seriously old there.
I do not have a TikTok account. I'm not ready for that. I'm not prepared. But yeah, I remember like, yeah, getting that account when I was 13 and just seeing how much there was on there and how much of a whole new space there was. And I was excited to just like explore more of that. And for those of you who might not know, if you have seen an ad for Unbound on Facebook or Instagram, that's because I run all of those. And so that is largely thanks to me at this point. And I didn't think at the time that that was going to be my career, but I do remember seeing over time, like I remember starting to see products that like I was interested in getting advertised on Facebook when that started to become more of a thing, and thought, well, that's interesting and started to have some mixed feelings about how they were using the fact that they knew what I was interested in and then they were selling things to me. And so I kind of parsed through that a little bit. But I also just remember seeing how useful it was to just have the opportunity to connect with people. And I remember, especially in Unbound, we made a lot of use of just the connectivity that social media offered to students across the entire nation and across the world to be able to connect. And, you know, I was able to make friends with several people that I still keep in touch with on a very regular basis that I never would have had the opportunity to if it weren't for the advent of social media. And so I think as far as things that were useful for that, that was a huge game changer that I still remember my parents being completely mystified by the fact that I was having multi-hour video calls with fellow college students that were from the other side of the country. And the fact that that was a new possibility was really amazing.
So when you think, David, to when you first sort of found out Facebook was a thing, and so you're talking about exploring and spending time on Facebook, you know, think about like, so there, I think for most of us, there's this point where it's like, okay, it's a thing. I don't know what the thing is. Mm-hmm. You know, so then you kind of tap it a little bit. It's like, well, that's kind of an interesting thing. And then at least for me, and I'm not as technically proficient as you are, David. So at least for me, it's normally like poke, poke, that's a thing. And then I kind of abandon it for a while because I'm not a first user necessarily for a lot of technological mm-hmm. stuff. It's not interesting to me to get poke around and go, oh, I wonder how we could use this. It's more like poke, poke, that didn't work too good. Next, you know, and then I've got to circle back to it when it's sort of a bigger thing, right? And then you kind of get immersed in it. And so I think you're more of a, let me experiment, figure this out. But between exposure and like, I'm spending a lot of time on this thing, you know, was that kind of initially, or was that, you know, a longer process?
I think probably because, especially at that time, I was very young and I was just like very excited to take the opportunity to learn something that I thought was cool and exciting. And I remember I did bring a lot of just like curiosity into it because like this is a brand new thing and this is connecting me to a whole new kind of like it feels cliche to say this, but in some sense it's like a whole new world of just like exploring interactions and communities that I had never been exposed to before, especially since I hadn't done a ton of traveling at that point either. And so I think it sparked a lot of curiosity of getting exposed to different people and different things. And there was a lot of, what all can I do with this? And even just poking around at different features. Funny enough, that you're talking about pokes, that was a large feature back in the day, was sending pokes to people. Yeah. And so if you're old enough to remember that, you know that you're probably of the not as hip generation of social media users at this point.
Go ahead. Think about that time. So you're messing with it. You're figuring out, you're discovering it. You know, how much, you know, your parents are going, why are you spending all these hours in these video calls? You know, I don't know. You don't have to quantify with hours, but, you know, were you spending a lot of time, a little time, moderate time on those platforms?
Probably. Realistically now, especially knowing what we know about how social media affects just the way that you think about things and the way you see the world, more than I should have. I'll definitely put it that way. But I would say, like, a moderate to large amount of time on there I was spending.
So I just go through all that because I think it's interesting to note there is a process here, right? You know, the internet comes along, nobody's really paying attention to it, and then it's a big thing. Then all of a sudden people are getting on it and they're spending hours and hours and hours doing early internet stuff, right? From games to blogs to just surfing the web. I mean, just, it sounds a little bit quaint now, but surfing, well, you know, like just going to website to website to website to website was like a thing early on. And it was just like this, it was this almost insatiable, and then desire to learn new things, which sounds so much admirable, but it was, you know, off these flashy websites, but all of a sudden it was like an endless library. You know, I mean, you could surf for hours and never, you know, always be finding new stuff. And so you'd be click, 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 click. And, you know, there was always people talking about, you know, nobody ever finishes an article because you get down to the hyperlink and you click through the next article, the next article, the next article. And of course that seems quaint compared to the attention spans now. And then there's social media, and David's spending what, you know, his parents might have said, this is a ridiculous amount of time on social media. And so, yeah, now you jump forward and you go, well, you know, for me, spending some time on the internet turned out to be pretty useful because I run businesses that rely wholly or partly on the internet in order to operate. And so some of that kind of internet knowledge is helpful. For David, it's like literally, you know, his primary paycheck comes from being able to use social media platforms to deliver and to do certain things, although probably not the things he was thinking about doing or was considering when he was using it recreationally when we first started. And so I draw that parallel to say that, you know, I suspect there's the same kind of thing happening with AI. there's a lot of people wasting a lot of time on it. There's a lot of bad things happening with it. And there's a lot of bad things happening with the internet and a lot of bad things happening with social media when it started. And those bad things get worse, right? So So the bad things on the internet from 1995 to 2005 are infinitesimally worse now. The bad things about social media from 2010 to 2020 are unbelievably worse now. So I'm not in any way papering over that. But it's also worth noting that the good things from those things have also grown. The utility of those things have also grown, the opportunities of those things. And I think we're going to see some of the same pattern with AI, is that there's going to be a lot of frivolous use. There's going to be a lot of awful things happening. And there's going to be a sorting as people realize that there's some ways to use this, and that's important. Now, the reason I kind of set all that up is that I think that the fear that I'm seeing is that, well, it's not worth me spending time doing blank because AI will just do that. Mm-hmm. And I want to make the argument that in very recent history, some of the same arguments are being made, and they're not without merit, but they're also not fully true. And so there's a lot of people that would said, you know, it's not worth me doing blank because the internet's going to do that. It's not me. Mm-hmm. It's not worth me, you know, learning how to do math or you know, it's because the spreadsheet's going to do that. It's not worth me learning how to research because Google's going to do that and Wikipedia's going to do that. More recently, it's not worth me learning how to do certain things because social media is going to do that, have conversations, all that. And yet that's true, but not fully true. And so while it is true that the internet has changed the way we interact with people and social media has changed the way we interact with people, and that's good and bad, and maybe people say mostly bad, it has not changed the fact that if you were a brilliant conversationalist, an excellent researcher, and a good writer in the late 90s, that would still be a set of skills that would be extremely useful to you here in 2020. Five and beyond, right? And so there's a level there that's like, but you wouldn't use them in exactly the same way. So if you're a good writer in the 1990s, you might have went to work for a newspaper, and that's not particularly likely in 2025. But ironically, if you're a good writer in 2025, it might be easier to make money on Substack, right? If you were a good communicator in the 1990s, you might go on some sort of, you know, speaking tour or something like that. And, you know, that's not quite as likely in terms of a full-time job in 2025. But ironically, you know, if you can speak in shorter bursts, you're likely to make a lot of money on TikTok and Instagram by delivering that content, or perhaps YouTube. And so there's idea that there's some core skills that are still going to be transparent. People say, well, yes, but AI can write, and yes, AI can do all those things, and AI can sing. And that's true, but I want to say that it's true like those other things were. Like, that is the case, but it's never going to be fully human. It's never going to be able to fully do the things that humans do. And the best ones, if they are able to replicate that at some level, are going to have to be trained by humans that already know how to do that. And so it's a bit preemptive and premature to think, well, I won't be able to. So let's go back to our truck driving example. I'm not going to get my CDL because the robot's going to be driving trucks in a couple of years. First, I don't actually think that's a very realistic outlook. Secondly, that ignores the fact that not all robots will be driving all trucks. So there's going to be a long residual economy. And then even at the far end of that, the robots that drive trucks are almost certainly going to need to be supervised, managed, trained, whatever, by people who are really good at driving trucks. And so this idea that you just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, well, I can't do that because AI will do that, it's only really relevant if AI is already obliterated it. And I don't know of a great example for that, but, you know, it may not be a great idea to think that you're going to make the rest of your career as a photojournalist who uses film, right? I mean, like, and that would have been true after the first digital cameras came out of the, you know, the very early stages. At that point, you know, that's clearly not, you know, that is a place that technology has sort of moved on. But it would not have been true that you shouldn't become a photographer. Which is still extremely important.
Yeah, very much so. And like, to bring in another example, back when computers were first starting to become more powerful, the animation industry, especially like around Disney, was huge. And so it was a really big sought after career to get into animation. And the majority of that was done by hand. But then when computer animation started to come around, then I think there was a lot of trepidation around that, of people saying, well, why would I try to, you know, go and learn art and that sort of like try to get into animation when there's going to be computer programs that are going to be doing it now? And while, yes, the advent of computer animation changed animation drastically and made it completely different as a field, there's a lot of those same core principles that had to be carried over, had to be understood at a very deep level in order to do computer animation well. You had to understand how to do that hand-drawn animation very, very well. You had to understand the principles behind motion and how to make expressions and lighting and how to, make different frames go together well. And so it was not as much of a, this career is completely unviable at this point. It's, and if anything, a better time for young people who are willing and ready to learn to get into it and say, okay, I can see that this career field is changing, so I'm going to jump in during a time of change when a lot of people who are going to be much more resistant and are not going to be as ready and willing to learn and adapt to that change are going to struggle a lot, whereas I'm going to be in a position where I don't have a lot of those bad habits, or just I'm not as locked into this is the way that things are supposed to be. I can jump in and say, I'm ready to learn the new way of doing things. I'm ready to take the old principles and combine it with the new technologies and find and potentially pioneer new ways of doing things that are exciting and interesting and kind of create my own new career field for myself. And I think, if anything, that for especially for young people who are recently graduating or entering into the workforce, I think that there's a lot of opportunity if you are willing to go in with that mindset and say, hey, I know that things are changing right now and I don't know exactly what the future is going to look like, but I think that's actually a good thing for me because I can come in without a lot of the preconceptions and be willing to hop on board with whatever comes next for this industry. Because I agree with you, I don't think that there's going to be that many industries that will be completely eliminated by AI like a lot of people are saying. Choosing the right resources for your high schooler can feel overwhelming. That's why we created Equip by Unbound, a program for 9th through 11th graders that combines skills training, coaching, and community to help students thrive now and in the future. Through life and study skills courses, worldview training, and hands-on projects, students build purpose, resilience, and confidence. Don't wait. Enrollment prices go up soon. Learn more and enroll at beunbound.us/equip.
So there's always when new things come on, there's always a bunch of doomsayers who sound really intelligent. And they often in the expert camp. And there's a whole podcast we could probably do about the validity of experts. You know, the reality is that you live in a place in time where, and David and I have seen them, actually we've gone through some of them, where there's a lot of training on how to become an expert. And most of that training on how to become an expert is how to become an expert when you're not. You know what I mean? Like one way to become an expert is to become an expert. Like, you know what I mean? Like you do your job so long that you're really good at it. But there's an entire industry that says this is how you portray whatever you're doing into an expert level of expertise that then you can get from, you can use from a marketing standpoint, presentation standpoint, things like that.
And then you can sell your masterclass online and make a bunch of money.
And there's that whole, but when you get that, you get a bunch of people who don't have really good depth of understanding, who say things that sound really certain and on the surface sound pretty good, especially if you don't know much about it. And then results in things like AI is going to obliterate everything. The internet's going to take over everything. Social media is going to ruin everything. And they're not entirely wrong. It's just that they're never comprehensive. That's true. You know, there are certainly things that AI is going to make difficult, impossible, eliminate. There's going to be pathologies and problems and all kinds of things that are going to be bad for us because of AI. But that doesn't recognize all the good things that are going to come along as well. And so when that happens, people often say things like, this will never be the same. And that's true, but it's not the truth. And here's what I mean by that. I can remember very distinctly when COVID was happening and everything was shut down that lots and lots and lots of so-called experts said, people are never going to travel again. People are never going to feel safe enough to do this again. People are not going to go to business meetings again. People are not going to go to conferences again. They're not going to go to concerts again. They're not going to get on planes again. They're not, I mean, and this was considered to be so obvious that it would be ridiculous to bet against it. And so you saw it in stocks going up and things like Zoom and all this kind of stuff, right? And so I saw a bunch of headlines today that, you know, American tourism has now exceeded pre-pandemic levels. Global tourism has now exceeded pre-pandemic levels. There's obviously, you know, Taylor Swift has shown that people will actually come to concerts, whether that's a good thing or not, as it is for you all to debate. The NFL is not losing money. Major League Baseball, well, it may not be as big as the NFL, is not losing money. The point is that those things did come back. And in some cases, they came roaring back. And now in many places, there's a hunger and an appetite for, you know, there's some interesting statistics on how many new restaurants are starting and how many, you know, people want to go on experiences and travel and do all those kinds of things. So what's the point? Well, the point here is that if you're listening to this, you probably come from a Christian faith background, and there's a practical advantage to that, because as Christians, there's some level of insight and understanding we get here that may not be available to anybody. And I'm not claiming some weird secret knowledge, and I'm not even claiming this is some sort of like, oh, great Christian, you get to make money. I don't mean that at all. It just means that one of the things about being a Christian is that our faith requires you to face reality. And when you face reality, you have to face what is real and what is true. And at the heart of Christianity is a relationship. A relationship that's beyond our understanding and comprehension to explain, but a relationship that we can understand as a relationship in the form of God, is, you know, the God, the Father, the Son, the Trinity. And then Christ wanting to have a relationship with us, and God wanting to have a relationship with us through Christ, and our relationship with, you know, the Spirit, Holy Spirit enters into us. And all these Christianese things at heart say something really important, is that relationships are really important, right? Mm-hmm. And when relationships are really important, then a whole lot of things flow out of that. But not just that relationships are really important, that relationships are built into the very fabric of reality. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the case, then it doesn't matter what the so-called experts say about whatever kind of whiz-bang, fantastic, really crazy, mind-blowing technology comes along. It's, will those technologies destroy relationships? Yes, because there's an enemy who wants to destroy relationships, and he's not above using technologies to do that. Mm-hmm. Will those technologies succeed in completely redefining and reforming relationships into something brand new? No, because that's not the way reality works, and because the enemy doesn't win in the end. And so when you're thinking about, you know, this in terms of what's next for me and what do I do, and from a career standpoint, well, I can't really specifically say what kind of computer language you should learn how to code. And if it gets to really specific technical jobs, we can't make any predictions as experts or otherwise what that looks like. But not claiming expert status, but instead claiming the ability to read scripture and to observe human nature status and to understand those things through a Christian worldview lens, I think we can say with some certainty that there's a baseline set of skills that will be necessary and required as long as this earth exists. And that is the ability to communicate, the ability to manage money, the ability to build and sustain relationships, the ability to communicate effectively, the ability to get projects from start to finish, the ability to research and learn new things, the ability to apply that knowledge to the things. Is that, and I don't want that to sound obscure, and I don't want that to sound abstract. The reality is you'll learn those things doing whatever job's right in front of you right now. And if that job specifically gets obliterated by some sort of technology, those skills will be transferable to whatever that technology has enabled. And those things often come as a package. Whatever it obliterates, it often enables as well. Mm. You know, digital photography obliterated film photography, but it enabled an appetite for images the likes of which the world has never seen. And it enabled people that take good images to be able to sell their wares, sell their talents and their abilities in ways the world had never seen. And so there's always two sides to this. And so as Christians, I'd say from a practical standpoint, you get kind of a unique insight into things that are going to be unchanging. And no matter what your career field is, if whatever you're doing, you're remembering to concentrate on those sort of base core level skills, at some level, you're future proofed. And it gets you in a position where you can use AI and not be used by it.
Right. And I think that the COVID example that you brought up at the beginning brings out another really powerful element of this, is that, you know, all of these things like concerts and sports games and vacations are all coming back and are even bigger than before and are coming back with even more numbers than before. And I think what, contrary to what some of those experts were saying, what COVID made us realize is that when we have in-person experiences and human connection taken away from us, we miss that and we realize just how much that is valuable. And then we want to take full advantage of that when that is available to us again. And so I think that's a really powerful lesson that can take, we can take advantage of, and we can look at with AI and see, you know, and any other really advancement or challenge, is that there's always an opportunity on the other side of it if you're looking for it hard enough. For example, with AI, you can see that there is just so much that's getting automated. There are so many things that used to involve a lot more of a human process that are instead being taken over by AI processes. And not to say that we should, that you should endeavor to completely shun using any sort of AI, but if you can go about your career in a way that says, hey, maybe this is a useful tool, but for, especially if you're interacting with customers or clients, how can I make that experience and that connection more human, more genuine, in a world where just people are becoming more and more disgusted by just how artificial and fake and just generated things are, and rather create real experiences for people to connect? Because that is one of the driving things that we as humans long for, is human to human connection. And so I think it's an opportunity as well to lean into that. And yeah, I think you put it really well, Jonathan, that if you're able to prioritize relationships and see the value in that and potentially make use of technology to facilitate that rather than replace it, then you could potentially be at a really huge advantage coming into career fields.
Well, we were in that position several years ago. In 2020, we were told that nobody would ever want to join an academic program that required them to do in-person experiences. And of course, that's changed pretty dramatically now. And we can tell you with full certainty that actually quite a few people will be pretty interested in that. And if you are interested in those kinds of relationships and those kinds of connections, then first of all, know that those things are pretty universal. And I think they stand the test of time, and the building the skills to help you do those things are going to be transferable no matter what you do. And if you're interested in figuring out how we do that, go to beunbound.us, or as we have kind of been learning from Apex and this idea of shift and all this change and preparing, getting ready for Basecamp, and maybe sharing some of those thoughts with you, that if you are in that situation where it looks like a very uncertain world, where you're not sure what to do next, and you feel like any path you take is going to get obliterated by AI, the answer is possibly, in some cases, perhaps probably, but that shouldn't stop you from starting to gain the skills and experiences that will ultimately be transferable no matter what technology obliterates in terms of the specific jobs. The ability to connect to other people, to communicate well, to build relationships, to get a project started and finished, to do it with integrity and honesty, to be able to manage resources well, those things are always going to be in demand. And you can learn those doing whatever is in front of you right now. So thank you so much for your time. We hope this was helpful. And until we see you next time, be unbound.
Hi, my name is Stephen Hall. I'm from New York, and I'm currently enrolled in Ascend Year 2 from Unbound. This year, I completed my first year in the Ascend program, and it was one of the best experiences of my life. Before joining Ascend, I was feeling kind of stuck. I had a lot of ideas about what I wanted to do after high school, but I wasn't confident in how to actually move forward into the real world. I didn't have a clear direction, and I felt like I was being pressured by expectations I didn't know how to fill. I kept hearing that going to college and getting an expensive degree was the only way to be successful. But the Ascend program changed all of that for me. From the very first day, the Navigate and Leadership courses provided useful and practical insights that I could implement right away in my work, my church, and in my life in general. Ascend was a launch pad for me into the real world. It gave me confidence to make the big decisions, and it equipped me to be a leader among my peers. Since going through Ascend Foundations, I have been operating a team of my own at work, and I find myself using the lessons I learned from Ascend on a daily basis to keep it running smoothly and efficiently. But the impact that Ascend had on my life went far beyond the academic or the vocational. And that is because the heart of Ascend is the people. The Unbound staff are phenomenal. They are passionate and relatable, and they genuinely care about every student's personal growth. My team was also incredible, and I can honestly say now that most of my closest friends are from Ascend. These students aren't afraid to ask the hard questions, and I have never had so many deep conversations in my life. I don't know at this point what career I'm going to go into. I don't know how much money I'm going to make. But going through Ascend has given me the confidence to step forward in faith into what God is calling me to do today. And it has given me an amazing community that I could have never even dreamed of. I can't wait to see what this next year has in store. And I hope I'll see you there.